Welcome to The Word for Today, featuring the Bible teaching of Pastor Chuck Smith of Calvary Chapel, Costa Mesa, California. Pastor Chuck is currently leading us on a verse-by-verse venture through the entire Bible. And on today's edition of The Word for Today, we'll be following the healing of Hezekiah as we pick up today's lesson in 2 Kings, chapter 20, verse 5. And now, here's Pastor Chuck Smith with today's message.
The Lord said, "Turn again and tell Hezekiah, the captain of my people, thus saith the Lord, the God of David thy father, I have heard thy prayer, I have seen thy tears." He prayed, he wept. God said, "I've heard your prayer, I've seen your tears. On the third day thou shalt go up to the house of the Lord." In 3 days you'll be strong enough to go up to the temple to worship again and to give thanks unto God. "And I will add to your days 15 years. And I will deliver thee and this city out of the hand of the king of Assyria." During your lifetime, you'll be freed from the hand of the Assyrians. Now, the Assyrians made two more incursions in this direction during Hezekiah's life, but they never came to Jerusalem. The Lord delivered him out of the hand of the Assyrians. "And I will defend this city for my own sake and for my servant David's sake." And so Isaiah said, "Take a lump of figs." And they took and laid it on the boil, and he recovered. God could just heal without the fig poultice. But God uses sometimes medicine to bring help and healing to people. And there is nothing wrong with taking medicine when you're sick. Here he pronounces the Lord is going to heal you, and then he instructs the people the method to use to bring the healing by the putting of the figs, the dried figs, over the boil. So God is extremely diverse, and he can do things in many different ways, and he doesn't want us to get to the place where we try to conform him to a box. And whenever you try to box God in to one method or one way, he's going to break that box every time. He's going to show that he can do things in diverse ways. He's not bound to any single pattern. And I'm really glad for that, because that means that you have to always leave every option open. God oftentimes changes and does things other ways just so that we know that he's not limited to one method or one way of doing his work. So Hezekiah recovered. But when Isaiah gave him this promise, in 3 days you're going to go to the temple, you know, you'll be strong enough to go to the temple to worship. Hezekiah said to Isaiah, "What sign shall there be that the Lord will heal me?" He wanted a sign from the Lord. And in the Old Testament, they often asked God for a sign. You remember Gideon said, "Give me a sign that I'm sure that I, you know, you're an angel that's talking to me. Let me put out a piece of wool on the ground, you know. And if in the morning it's dry and the ground is wet." Asking for a sign. In the New Testament, Jesus said, "A wicked and an adulterous generation seeks after a sign." In the New Testament, it was a sign of unbelief to ask God for a sign. But in the Old Testament, it was something that was done quite often. And now that we have Jesus Christ, what more proof do we need? He is the sign, once and for all, of God's love for you. But here this fellow is asking for a sign. Now, his son Ahaz, Isaiah had come to him and he said, "The Lord saith unto thee, ask a sign." And Ahaz said, "I'm not going to ask for a sign." And it was a sign of his unbelief. Ahaz was a wicked king. What an ask for a sign. He says, "Well, the Lord will give you one anyhow." And he said, "A virgin's going to conceive and bring forth a son, call his name Emmanuel." And actually, the sign that Ahaz refused was the greatest sign to be given to man concerning the Messiah, that he would be born of a virgin. Now Hezekiah is saying, show me a sign. Give me a sign. What shall be the sign? The Lord will heal me. That I know that in 3 days, I mean, that's an awful long time. I'm awful sick. You know, I feel miserable still. And how can I know that in 3 days I'm going to be strong enough to go to the temple? What sign shall there be? And Isaiah said, this sign shalt thou have of the Lord, that the Lord will do the thing that he hath spoken. Shall the shadow go forward 10 degrees or go back 10 degrees? That is the sundial. Shall the shadow on the sundial go forward or go backward 10 degrees? And Hezekiah answered and said, well, if it would go forward, it wouldn't be much. I mean, it means the sun fell a little bit in the sky maybe, but if it returned backward, it'd be quite a sign. So Isaiah the prophet cried unto the Lord. Now Isaiah prayed about it. The guy asked for a difficult sign. Let the sundial go back 10 degrees. And he brought the shadow 10 degrees backward, by which it had gone down on the dial of Ahaz. Fascinating. How do you explain it? I don't know. Except that I don't have any problem with it. Now, I know that it is a scientific impossibility. We know that the earth is rotating on its axis, and it would appear to be that maybe God just stopped it and turned it back a little bit and then spun it again. Now, my concept of God is such that I wouldn't be troubled with it. I'm sure that God could do that. If God could create the universe and the heavens are the work of his fingers, then it would be no problem for God to just take and bring the thing to a stop and turn it backwards. And then give it another spin. There are other plausible scientific explanations. It could be a refraction of the sun that was caused by a partial eclipse. And it would appear that the shadow went back. And that is a possible explanation, a partial eclipse of the sun at that time. I don't like that quite as well. The God that I serve can do anything. I have no problems. You say, but the earth is spinning at 1,000 miles an hour. If God should suddenly stop the earth, man, everybody would go flying off, you know. Well, you can slow from 1,000 miles an hour down to zero in about 10 minutes without disturbing too much, without having to brake too hard. God's not dumb. He's not going to just doop, you know, and stop the thing and everybody fly off. I mean, he could just do it in an orderly way. He is not controlled by his universe. He controls the universe. I can hardly wait to find out how wrong a lot of our brilliant scientists are. We've already found that out. In my lifetime, they've been proven wrong in so many of their postulations, their concepts and all of the universe, even our flyby Jupiter and all. God's done some real fascinating things with Saturn. Oh, God sort of interwove those rings just to really confuse them. I love it. He's done a lot of interesting things out there that just have us totally astounded. We think we've got it all figured out, and then we look closer and we say, well, no, that couldn't be. My, it must be this, you know. And they're always speculating. And many of their speculations have already proven to be false as we gain further knowledge of the subject. Actually, remember before the lunar landing, all of the concern by the scientists that the space lab was going to sink into 17 feet of lunar dust. Because scientifically, we know that the moon has been there for at least 4 billion years and possibly as many as 12 billion, and it doesn't really have an atmosphere to consume the meteorites. And so all of this meteorite dust from all of the exploding meteorites that have struck the moon throughout these 12 billion years or so, it must have at least 17 feet of dust. And so they had all the preparations of this thing just dropping into the dust. And there was a couple of inches. Oh, does that mean then that the moon hasn't been there for 12? Oh, no, no, no. It takes 12 billion years for man to evolve from a protozoa to his present state. So we got to have 12 billion years. Because we know evolution is true. We just don't understand why there isn't more dust. Figures don't lie, but liars sure can figure. Doesn't bother me how God did it. I believe that it happened because the Bible says so. That's all I need. Now at this time, Berodach Baladan, the son of Baladan, the king of Babylon, sent letters and a present to Hezekiah, for he heard that he had been sick. So there came these envoys from Babylon. Now, at this time, Babylon was just a little province, and it was being harassed by Assyria. In fact, it was sort of under the control of Assyria. This Baladan had made about 3 abortive attempts to revolt against Assyria. And in sending to Hezekiah, the probable purpose was to form an alliance against Assyria, because Assyria was the world power at that time, and most of the nations had been subdued by Assyria, and so Assyria was too strong for any single nation to overthrow, and he no doubt was looking for an alliance with Hezekiah. He had heard of the strength of the kingdom under Hezekiah, how Judah had become so strong, and how actually 185 Assyrian soldiers were wiped out when they came against Jerusalem in the siege. And so he was looking, no doubt, for a sort of military alliance that together they might join against Assyria. And so hearing that Hezekiah was sick, he sends a present to him. And Hezekiah hearkened to them, and he showed them all of his house, the precious things, the silver, the gold, and the spices, which were again in that day a sign of wealth, the precious oils. He showed him his armory and all that was found in his treasures. There was nothing in all of his house or dominion that he didn't show these guys. That he wanted to say, hey, yeah, I could be a strong ally to you? Or was it that he was looking himself for an alliance because Assyria was still a threat to him? And even though Isaiah had said, don't trust in the arm of flesh, trust in the Lord will deliver you from the Assyrians, is it that he is sort of looking to perhaps forge this alliance with Babylon against Assyria? We don't know, but anyhow, he showed them everything, his armory and his wealth and all that he had. And then came Isaiah the prophet to King Hezekiah, and he said, what did these men say to you? And from whence did they come unto thee? He answers the second question first, sort of avoiding the first question. He said, they've come from a far country, even from Babylon, a long way off. And Isaiah pressed the first question again, and he said, and what have they seen in your house? And Hezekiah answered, all the things that are in my house have they seen. Nothing among my treasures that I have not showed them. And Isaiah said to Hezekiah, hear the word of the Lord. Behold, the days will come that all that is in your house and that which your fathers have laid up in store unto this day shall be carried into Babylon. Nothing shall be left, saith the Lord. Here is the first prophetic indication that Babylon would be the conqueror of the southern kingdom of Judah. Assyria had already conquered the northern kingdom. If you were there at the time, and if you were an analyst and all, and if you, you know, were looking at the world powers and all this, you would say, well, surely the major threat to Judah. And if you were just prophesying out of your own head, you'd be prophesying that Judah would fall to Assyria. That would be the logical assumption. But Isaiah is speaking from the Lord. He's prophesying, and it will not be Assyria that conquers Judah. It will be Babylon. Now, as time goes on, Isaiah, in his prophecies, is going to make a lot of declarations concerning Babylonians conquering of Jerusalem. And Jeremiah, who prophesies a short while after Isaiah, will actually give a lot of specifics of the conquering of Judah by Babylon. And Isaiah later on will not only tell of Babylon, which at this time was just a little provincial kingdom of Babylon conquering Judah, he's going to tell you how Babylon will be conquered by Medo-Persia, which were two smaller provinces, inconsequential at that time. And he will tell exactly how Medo-Persia will conquer Babylon. And he even names the king 250 years before the king was born. So that when Isaiah says this happens, you'll know that God was the one who was speaking and he knew what he was talking about. So, quite interesting, this prophet Isaiah, he is now showing that Babylon is going to be the one that is going to carry off the treasures of Judah. Did it happen? Oh, it most certainly did, just as he predicted. And he said, thy sons that shall issue from thee. Wait a minute, he doesn't have any sons yet, you see. Interesting. He's sort of predicting you're going to have a son. Thy sons that shall issue from thee, your descendants, your progeny, which thou shalt beget, shall they take away, and they shall be eunuchs in the palace of the king of Babylon. Jehoiachin, Zedekiah, Daniel, all of these were descendants of Hezekiah, who were carried away and became chamberlains there in the palace of the king of Babylon. And the prophecy of Daniel has that whole context. Daniel and Azariah, and commonly known as Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, were the princes that were taken when Nebuchadnezzar took the captives at his first captivity of Jerusalem. And they were groomed to be eunuchs there in the palace of the king. Then said Hezekiah unto Isaiah, good is the word of the Lord which you have spoken. And I'm sure that all the guys thought, woo, what's wrong with the king? He's really sick. What do you mean, good? He just told you, you know, that Babylon's going to come and carry away all your treasures and your princes and so forth. What's good about that? And he said, it's good if there is peace in my days. Seems to me a rather selfish way of looking at it. Well, it's not going to happen during my lifetime, so. Now, the rest of the acts of Hezekiah, all of his might, how he made a pool, that would be the pool of Siloam, and a conduit, that is that conduit or cave under the Mount Ophel, 1,710 feet carved out of solid rock from the spring of Gihon, which was outside of the walls, to the pool of Siloam that he built within the walls. A tunnel that is about 2 feet wide, for the most part from 3 to 4 feet high. Some places it gets as much as, 12, 14 feet. but it goes 1,710 feet through solid rock, brings the waters of the pool or of the spring of Gihon on into within the city walls at that time to this big pool that he made, the Pool of Siloam. Beautiful engineering feat by the men as they started at both directions, tunneling through, met somewhere about the middle. And so these things, are they not written in the book of the Chronicles of the Kings of Judah? So we'll come across Hezekiah twice more. Once when we get to the Chronicles of the Kings of Judah, and then when we get to the book of Isaiah.
We'll return with more of our study of 2 Kings in our next lesson, as we follow the horrible reign of Manasseh. And we do hope you'll make plans to join us. But right now, I'd like to remind you that if you missed any part of today's message, or perhaps you'd like to order a copy for that special friend or loved one, you can do so by simply contacting one of our customer service representatives, and they'd be more than happy to assist you with the ordering details. Simply call 1-800-272-WORD, and phone orders can be taken Monday through Friday, 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. Pacific Time. Once again, our toll-free number is 1-800-272-9673. And for your added convenience, you can order online anytime when you go to thewordfortoday.org. And while you're there, be sure to browse through the additional resources that include Bible studies, commentaries, CDs, DVDs, and so much more. Once again, that's The Word for Today online at thewordfortoday.org. And for those of you who still prefer to write, you can use our mailing address, which is The Word for Today, P.O. Box 8000, Costa Mesa, California, 92628. And be sure to include the call letters of this station with your correspondence. And now, on behalf of The Word for Today, we'd like to thank all of you who share in supporting this ministry with your prayers and financial support. And be sure to join us again next time as Pastor Chuck Smith continues his verse-by-verse study through the book of 2 Kings. That's right here on the next edition of The Word for Today. And now, once again, here's Pastor Chuck Smith.
May the Lord bless you and guide you as you go this week. As you face the many temptations, may the Lord give you strength, and may you walk and live after the Spirit, and may you respond after the Spirit. In the temptation, may you not yield to the flesh and react after the flesh. May your life be pleasing unto God as our actions come into harmony with our declarations of what we believe. May we show it in the works that we do. In Jesus' name.
I've got some exciting news to share with you. The Word for Today is releasing Pastor Chuck and Kay's books in ebook format. For those who like to read books electronically, you can now download Pastor Chuck's books to your Kindle reader, iPad, iPod, or even cell phone. What a blessing to be able to have these resources with you at all times, especially when you're in a place to minister to another person. If you have an e-reader, then you know the advantage of being able to search, find, and minister within seconds. And with all of Pastor Chuck and Kay's insights into biblical wisdom, this is a great opportunity to be able to gain from their books so you can share the good news with others. If you would like more information on how to download Pastor Chuck and Kay's ebooks, you can call the Word for Today customer service department at 1-800-272-WORD or visit us online at thewordfortoday.org.
This program has been sponsored by The Word for Today in Costa Mesa, California.